Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. My guest for this episode is John O'Niger, one of the organizers of the Permaculture Institute of the Northeast and a partner at Regenerative Design Group, LLC. In our conversation, we touch on his practices as a professional designer and some of the business elements related to that work, about permaculture education, collaborating with colleges, and the need to develop one's own niche. If you enjoy this episode, support the podcast by making a one-time or ongoing donation to the show. Find out how at www.thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. Now then, on to Jono. I'll join you afterwards with thoughts, updates, and some class announcements.
Well then, Jono, Mr. Niger, if you are ready, could you give us a bit of your background and biography, how you came to do what you're doing, and we'll take things from there.
Thanks, Scott. I have a pretty typical suburban upbringing in a town in New York and really didn't have too much of a land connection, though I love being outdoors and wandering through the woods. But with my family and my home, we really weren't actively involved in our home. So I did have a lot of interest in nature and the outdoors, and I ended up going to college and getting an ecology degree, studying biology, and after college worked in field biology, and so I really dove deep into natural systems, ecosystems, studying different species, and I really had a concern for the environment and the environmental damage I saw around me, so I was working in conservation biology and doing environmental activism and really involved in my community trying to stop bad logging practices and bad land management practices, but still I felt doing this ecology work and the field biology work that it wasn't enough just studying the ecosystem, that I really wanted to be more involved in the solutions. And I ended up diving into restoration ecology and doing restoration work. I worked for the Nature Conservancy for several years in California on the Sacramento River, and we were replanting forest land in these flood-prone areas, and seeing the forest come back was really a very empowering and amazing to see people involved in that restoration work and making a positive difference. But even so, I felt like we're fixing what problem is, we're fixing the damage, but why are we still damaging the land? Why are we still causing these problems? And so I ran into permaculture through some happenstance and had a real aha moment that this made so much sense and that we could make a positive contribution and redesign our communities, our homes. I moved to Lost Valley Educational Center and Intentional Community in Oregon and took a PDC there. I was a resident and became the land steward and really was the chance to cut my teeth on doing land projects in all different arenas. I was working in the gardens and putting in perennial hedgerows and plantings of different crops to trial. We were doing natural building and raising animals and digging ponds, doing all sorts of different things, just trying it out, learning about it, and running programs and people coming onto the land so they could experience working with these different systems. And so it was really powerful for me both to learn the work on the land and then also learn some of the educational, how to expose people and present these ideas and facilitate learning experiences with people on the land there in Oregon. Since then, I've come back to the East Coast where I grew up, and I live in rural Western Massachusetts, and I have a small property of 3 acres, a homestead where basically I'm trying out different strategies, different things on my property, including renovating an old home and putting in plantings and ranging animals and working within our community. There's a lot of interesting community involvement both here in the property and in the area. And I also run a design business and do education work in the area, running courses and speaking at different events. So that keeps me pretty busy.
When I spoke to David Holmgren, a part of the conversation that we had was about developing different models for practicing permaculture. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to speak with you, was to continue that discussion from that thread about practicing permaculture professionally and different ways that we can do that. And I would like to speak with you more about what you're doing in these roles that you fill. But I have a question for you before we get there, because of your background in ecology and biology and working as a conservation biologist. Combining the two worlds of that background with permaculture, how do you respond to some of the critiques of conservation biology?
I mean, I think that for me, it's very powerful to come into permaculture with an ecology and biology background. I think that the awareness of ecological systems and cycles and how ecosystems work is just fundamental to our practice. And so if we want to be designers and doing ecological design, we really have to come at it from understanding ecology. And if we want to mimic ecosystems, we really have to observe them deeply and try and respond to what is happening on the land. I have felt like it's been a really great fit for me to have that background and understanding, and really have it, have spent a lot of time in nature, in the ecosystem, studying it, working, managing. And so I think it's a sound practice. I think the only reference that I have heard around pseudoscience is not so much around conservation biology, but maybe you're thinking of invasion biology and Theodoropoulos' work on invasion biology, critique of a pseudoscience. Is that possibly?
That's the book that formed the question, though I've heard the conversation about conservation biology and invasion biology used as synonyms for one another in the discussions.
That's so interesting. Well, I have a lot of respect for conservation biologists as, inherently people who are really trying to work out how we can protect ecosystems. And I think it's some amazing work that people are doing. I think that in some ways it goes too far when we begin to talk about these newly arrived species that are here. They're here because we brought them here, or they're here because they dispersed here on their own. And then we start to think that we know what should be happening in the ecosystem. And there is a lot of hysteria, a lot of, I think, psychosocial guilt for what we see, the damage in the ecosystem that pretty much we have done, and we're putting that onto these other species. So I think there's all sorts of things happening in that area. I've spent a lot of time studying the science behind invasion biology, and a lot of what gets put out there isn't supported by the science, and there's kind of a new wave of rethinking some of the ideas, at least in some quarters, maybe not among the people who are pretty strongly entrenched. But a lot of people are looking at novel ecosystems and these new combinations, and that a lot of the new combinations of species are actually functioning. They're working as ecosystems and doing what ecosystems have done, filtering, uptaking nutrients, sequestering carbon, providing habitat. They're doing what these groups of species have always done, is they organize in different ways. So it's a pretty interesting time, and there's a lot of change. I'm in touch with different scientists who are really looking at their assumptions and their ideas around new species. And so it's kind of an exciting time, and yet there's people who have some really strong feelings, and it gets pretty hot and testy at times, for sure.
And from what we talked about for where we want to take this conversation today, we might touch on some other topics that are also kind of warm to hot within the community. Thank you, though, for your response. I really appreciate hearing more about these ideas and getting to add further dialogue to these different discussions and to understand them more broadly than just one particular perspective. My background in biology was never particularly specialized in a given direction, so being able to speak with someone who has that experience is very valuable.
It's helpful to have dug into some of the issues. And I always, when I'm doing a presentation and I'm showing examples of some of the different plant systems and forest gardens that we're working with, and constantly having people ask me, well, isn't that plant invasive? Isn't that a problem? And there's some serious just base misunderstandings about ecosystem dynamics and how species arrive and take up space and move. And so it's really it's a bit of a problem right now, because permaculturists can get, I think, pigeonholed into being rogue people who are planting invasive species. So I think it's good that we have a discussion and we talk about it and kind of vet some of the issues and look at what's real within those concerns, and then also what's some side issues.
And I will look to add some additional resources to these ideas in the show notes for this episode.
And I could send you some links and some articles that would be pretty interesting for folks to look at.
From here, I would like to talk about your work as a professional designer and educator, and what that looks like on the ground for you and how you're making that functional as a career.
Sure. Well, I have a small design firm. There's six of us, work out of a studio, design studio in Greenfield, Massachusetts. And we're a LLC. There's three of us that own and really run the business. And then we have a group of folks that work on projects. And then we also have some seasonal help that come in as needed to bust out big projects. And it's been quite a journey. I was in my own practice, my own design work privately solo for a number of years. And then going into practice with a group of people has been great. It's been great in that we were able to share the responsibilities, and I don't have to carry every bit of running a business. It's one thing we don't learn in a PDC or in design school where I went, was the running of a business and getting clients and tracking projects, budget tracking and time tracking, and all the aspects of running the business. It can be very challenging. And so it's been really great. It's also allowed us to take on more projects and larger projects, and also to be able to take some time off when I need to get away, but somebody else can step in and take care of things and make sure that the project is continuing on. So we're doing really well. We've been in business for about 6 years and went through the recession, but the interest is really high in the work that we do. We're really finding people wanting to change their homes, put in gardens and orchards and water systems, water catchment systems, finding a lot of farmers that want to try out some of the different strategies that we're promoting, from the windbreaks and pollinator plantings to different kinds of cropping systems and different kind of crops. So it's been really rewarding, and it's a challenge, the challenge of running a business, being in an environment where we're trying to hold a niche that is pretty professional, where we do really professional design drawings that can be used for communication, for meetings and fundraising and presenting to people. And so we're sort of not a landscape architecture firm, but we're working in that arena in some ways. And so it's pretty competitive and it's pretty challenging to work that way. But I think we're doing really well at it, and we're getting a lot of praise for the work that we're doing.
And the website for your design group is regenerativedesigngroup.com?
That's right.
Okay. I'm there at the moment and I can see some of your design drawings and other pieces, and it's just, yes. The level of professionalism is right there, and it's very nice to see. And in some ways, I think that if you've heard of the term greenwashing, the idea of applying the ideas of sustainability or green, quote-unquote, businesses to more traditional organizations as kind of a way to get them to pass within certain communities. I don't know if it's just me, but I've noticed that there's some, if you will, like perma-washing occurring, where certain things are being called permaculture without necessarily being permaculture, and I'm looking through these pictures and seeing these nice integrated designs with paths for people to walk on, but you have very diverse and integrated planting. One of these looks like it's outside of perhaps a campus or an industrial building.
Well, I think that there's greenwashing where people are really just trying to do the minimum that they can, or it's really just about promoting whatever they're doing. A lot of the people that we work with really want to change what they're doing, how they're doing it. But there's a reality, too. There's budget realities. There's people's time. How suitable are different properties? So I think that we're really going into different settings and trying to figure out for people what is going to work on an individual property, what makes sense for them in that very specific setting. And so if they only take on some pieces, they're not ready for a full-on water catchment system. There's an opportunity for an energy system or for doing a filtration buffer before the water goes to the stream nearby. People can't do everything right away, and people have to move along at the pace that they can handle. We're often, I should say, working with people who are maybe not ready to take on the level of integration, the level of projects that we would like. Or we work with somebody who feels like they want to put, say, a driveway in one area. We don't think it makes sense. It's not the best place. And there's some negotiation that has to happen. So I definitely don't fall down on kind of a purist, there's only one, you know, it has to be all or nothing, or it has to be done exactly right. You know, people are making the change that they can, and organizations too. We're working on campuses, we're working with different community groups or community farms, and these organizations, they have a complex decision-making structure. They have to go through budgeting. And so it's really, what we found is that if we can kind of get our foot in the door, build some trust, let people know what we can offer, even what kind of possibilities there are on a piece of land, it can get kind of exciting. Trying to get students activated, they can apply pressure, then things can start to happen. You know, there's definitely, I think, in the campus environment with colleges, universities, where it is being used for sales, that if they can get some projects on the campus, on the one hand, and it can be a little bit disheartening if it feels like the college is using some activities to promote how green they are and how ecological, and yet they're not really fundamentally changed. But I think that that's the change that we're working towards, and starting with activating places on the campus and educating students, educating faculty is really, it's a starting place, and we can sort of just get deeper and deeper into these institutions to really change them more fundamentally.
I'd like to talk some about your work with the campuses. I pulled down your project list from your website, and it shows that you've worked with UMass and Marlborough College and Wellesley College. Before we move to that, one quick question I have is all of the design work that you and the Regenerative Design Group is doing permaculture? Or like what percentage of the design work that you're doing would you say is permaculture based?
That's a good question. And it maybe gets into what is permaculture. I hold permaculture really as a pretty big basket that holds all these different practices. We do not do ornamental landscapes or landscape maintenance, but what I've found is with the different people that we work with is that with just about anybody, wherever they are, they're wanting to be more connected to their land. They're wanting to have some more involvement or understanding of what's happening in their land, maybe grow food or maybe not, maybe just catch water, whatever they're wanting. There's opportunities for integration and connection. So we're working with people wherever they're at, sometimes doing full-on complete redesigns and fully developing a homestead or with a community really thinking about all the interconnections and what they could be doing and designing how done. Other times, other people we work with, they're just ready to take on some piece, and they're looking to how they can move forward, how they can live more ecologically on their land or take care of some erosion problem or an opportunity to bring in pollinators. So I think that though it, you know, it might be an outstanding question. Is it permaculture if it's not all of the things at once? We look at it more as we're bringing a permaculture perspective and looking to apply permaculture principles onto a property. And a lot of times it could be not invisible, but it's not super showy. It's not, you know, a big splash design. It could be just advising people on what's growing on the land, what are some special places on the land so that they feel more connected, and they might then spend more time out in their landscape, and they're going to take on what they want to take on. So it's sort of an interesting process. I see permaculture as a really large framework, and that people are doing lots of different things. Not everybody, I think, should be growing food on their land in a big way. Maybe everybody should grow something and have some connection, but other people are really more involved in organizing or involved with community groups or education or other things. So it's going to look very different. So when we come into a situation, we're really trying to assess the people and what their needs and abilities and desires are, and then how to fit that into the land or their community. So it's a interesting process, and it can be really diverse in what it looks like.
You remind me of, I believe it was something that I read from Patrick Whitefield about, we can practice permaculture as mimicry or as design, that we can create something that looks like what we might see in a woodland, or we could create something that looks like a Victorian tea garden that is still based within permaculture and using those ideas to make it more regenerative.
Mm-hmm, right, and to bring some of these ideas into different settings, it's going to have different looks depending on who we're reaching out to. And the formal landscape is a challenge. In our culture, there's a real desire for order and control, and I think a lot of permaculture, a lot of what we do in landscapes tend to have a wilder, diverse, kind of a bit of a rough edges. So we're sort of constantly challenged to try to have the functions that we want happening, food or pollinator support or filtering water, and have that happening and have it look really nice is something we have to push towards ourselves.
That idea of bringing permaculture into different settings serves as a nice segue into the work that you're doing for bringing sustainability and permaculture onto college campuses. Could you share what that process looks like and how you've been able to do this?
Sure. Well, we're working with some different campuses and in different kinds of ways. And at UMass Amherst, there's a student group that arose up, and several students organized some programs there and working with the dining commons to develop gardens right on the campus. And in that situation, we came in kind of as technical support to help them with grounding some of the ideas they had. They really had a lot of excitement and a lot of interest in food growing and bringing it into the dining commons and showing students what could be done on the campus. But they needed a little more, how do you actually do this? How do you build soil? What are the appropriate plants? What are the ways to lay out beds and gardens? And how can we integrate perennials, forest garden? I come in the wintertime. We've been designing a garden during the winter as a class. And then in the spring, going out onto the campus and actually implementing it, so the students really get the whole process from design and understanding a space and what the considerations are, all the way through to putting cardboard down and laying the layers over the top, putting plants in, moving plants and taking care of the plants, harvesting and pruning and all the tasks of caring for spaces. So on other campuses, it's been similarly working with student groups, or in the case of Wellesley College, we're working on an edible ecosystem teaching garden, and this is in association collaboration with Dave Jackie. And there, through the folks at the botanical garden, it's a little more formalized, putting in a teaching garden that is demonstrating some of these different practices and also has a pretty big research component where questions about the different plants, the different polycultures can be researched and can observe them really closely and what kind of lessons can be learned from working with the plants. It's a little different, and so each college, it kind of depends on what the students are wanting, how they're wanting to implement projects on their campuses. At Marlborough College, we've been working both teaching some classes there, and then the classes are sometimes also implementing projects on the campus or redesigning areas. And we've redesigned some parts of the campus, trying to zoom out and think about the circulation patterns and how do cars move, and then how does water move. And so really, it's exciting. It's really fun working with the students. They're so interested in this and the idea that you can have active involvement and participate and learn specific skills, but also get this understanding of the sort of our communities as ecosystems, and then how can we make changes that just really make the whole place better. So it's been really a lot of fun working with students and then seeing how they then take these skills they've learned and go out and take it into the world in so many different ways. It's just really kind of giving them a toolkit, and the campus and college being a place that they can learn in a more hands-on way than I think a lot of schools are doing. It's a really good fit, and we're having a lot of fun with working with the students.
If students or anyone currently working at or with a university would like to learn more about the work that you're doing to connect with campuses, could they contact you through your website for more information?
Yes, I'd say definitely get in touch and talk with us. There's different student groups I could put folks in touch with, and we can talk about what our role is as kind of design support and education. And I would definitely be happy to talk with anybody about what we're doing and what we're learning about working with campuses.
I know that that's something that I would like to learn more about. Perhaps we could do a follow-up interview to talk about that in more depth in the future. Where I happen to live in central Pennsylvania, there are quite a few local public and private educational institutes that people could connect with and be doing a lot of good work.
Yeah, I think it's a great place of opportunity for us to go to reach in, and we can reach a lot of people who are young and they're just about to launch into their careers and lives. And so to just get to folks at that point and give them some skills and perspective, a permaculture perspective, I think is really powerful.
Are you teaching any permaculture design courses with the universities or in concert with them?
Yes, we have. So last year we taught some classes at Marlborough College. Sometimes they're just short courses that are tied to the specific project, and then other times they're longer courses, semester long. At UMass Amherst is a quite a large school, so there's several other local teachers who are teaching on the campus, teaching permaculture on the campus that are through UMass Extension. So there's a variety of different approaches being used on the campus all at once. So I think the traditional classroom experience or even an online course is one way. We're a little bit more focused on working with the student groups on applying permaculture onto the campus. How can they design spaces on the campus and use it as a learning tool to implement a design.
Really using the space that they're familiar with to work within.
Right, and using the campus as a palette, and then you get this ripple effect where they're learning, but then all the people who are passing by it every day, they're seeing it, and so So events can happen there and learning can happen there to the campus as a whole.
And it sounds like you're getting a lot of really good buy-in, not only from the universities, not only to allow this work to continue, but also from the interest of the students to get these programs started. That's really nice.
Oh, I think there's just a surging interest on campuses. Somewhat it's because after all those years in school, when I think young folks, they get up into college, and in the later years of college, they're really, really wanting to have something more applied, a little bit. You can get it, only have so much book learning, and you've got to get out there and get your hands in it. And I think they also see that the world is changing, and there's some serious problems, and that permaculture has a framework to actively try and change what's happening and make a difference. So it's really, I think a lot of students who are really very excited about permaculture.
From that place of working with campuses and college students, a large part of connecting with others is about communicating and network building. And before we began the formal part of this interview, that was something that we spoke about, especially as there are more regional permaculture organizations that are being brought online and the impact that that's having on the community. So I was wondering if you could speak with us from your experience as the past board member of the Permaculture Institute of the Northeast and your other work about networking and building community, both within permaculture and with groups and organizations outside of it.
Sure. Yeah, well, I've been involved these last 10 years in the regional organizing of the permaculture network in the Northeast. There was really a period in 2005 or so where a bunch of us became aware of each other and were working in different parts of the region, and there were some nodes of activity developing, and we started to communicate with each other, and we got together and just sitting in the same room, people from around the region, and we said, how can we support each other, what we're doing in our different parts of the region, and how can we support building the network, bringing more people in, making it just easier for people to get involved and to get activated in permaculture. And really, this round of regional organizing started in the Northeast about 10 years ago, and out of those early meetings that we had, we started a regional convergence that will now have its 10th one this year in Maine, and we have started some other projects, a database of projects. We've been hosting the listservs and a wiki and some communication. So we're a small and the other piece out of that was to start the nonprofit Permaculture Institute of the Northeast to be a tool, to be an organization that can support regional organizing. And a small group, I am still on the board. I was the president of the board from founding it through until a couple months ago when I stepped down. And we've got a strong board of 7 of us from around the region. And there's just a real energy right now within our region from hosting both the summer convergences, and then we've also hosted a number of winter meetings, off-season meetings. Omega Institute here has hosted some gatherings of people involved in the network. And I think what we've found is that the more that we can be interacting and get together for face-to-face time in different venues and different ways, and just to learn what we're doing, to share information, to look for ways to support each other, and also looking for, there's certain areas within a region that are really activated and they have strong networks, and then there's other places where people are working and they're fairly isolated. They don't have a lot of support community. You know, it's helpful to know where they can go to talk to people, to bring in a speaker, or to have someone help them on a design project. So there's sort of a lot of just helping to make those connections to support the whole rising up of the region. And we've found that the tools that we put in place for regional organizing have helped to tie the network together and make it so that people who are new to permaculture and are interested in getting involved start to learn and start to know where they can go to find what's happening, where it's happening. And so it's been a very rewarding process, and I think we've been pretty successful in weaving a nice basket within our in the region.
When you speak of tools, what do you mean by that for your organizing process? Is that your convergences and face-to-face meetings, or is there more to it than that?
The tools kind of rest a lot on the face-to-face. We've got our summer convergence as a big festive event, and then generally the winter meetings or the fall or winter meetings have been smaller groups of people that are more involved in permaculture and permaculture organizing within their local areas. And so those are more like strategy meetings or focused on supporting educators or designers or community organizers. So I'd say those are kind of the main tools in addition to the online communication, the listservs and wiki, and there's a Ning that gets used for conversations and posting documents. So those are what we have in place. And then right now we're developing this database of courses and projects so that people can have a place to come to see what's happening, to get information about courses that's not necessarily promotional material that starts to separate out individual people promoting their course versus here's a database, a place where you can just come and read about what's being offered, what the teacher's background is, what's the core information, and then be able to make a decision based on that versus sometimes I think the promotional material can be exciting and interesting, but there's some really good teachers who might not be great at promoting, putting exciting marketing material out, and vice versa.
When you mention about not everyone being good at marketing or promotion, each of us kind of have our own specialties. And if we focus on the things that we're good at and work with others to take care of the things that we're not, we can do more, better than if we try to, you know, kind of be our own superhero and do it all by ourselves. So these kinds of resources are really important for the community. And is that database available and accessible by the public online?
The database is in process right now. It will be on the Pine website fairly soon, which is at thepine.org, or is it northeastpermaculture.org? And it will be available soon. It's really in process right now. We're beginning to populate the database and reaching out to people. It is pretty exciting because I think there is an aspect that to have a network, it's not necessary that we are all doing everything. Not everybody is going to be a homesteader and be able to put up all their food and raise animals and have a forest garden and ponds and orchard and all these things. And some people are really great at reaching out and doing community organizing. Some people are going to be great at working within the school system, or other people have a really excitement about designing in different settings and working with residential design or urban design. And so as our networks develop and they diversify, there's so many niches that can be filled and created even that aren't even thought of. That's going to be really where we can become more influential as we start to reach into already existing systems, already existing structures, communities, and we're just really involved in whatever's happening in that community at all different levels. So yes, the database is, it's going to take some time to get there, but really the whole regional organizing has that focus, supporting people in whatever they're doing and helping them get skills they need to be more effective.
One last question that I have before we begin to bring things to a close is, much earlier in the conversation, you mentioned about how we kind of, you know, we go through college or we come out of a PDC or something and don't have the business skills in many cases to go off and become permaculture entrepreneurs. Are you, or is anyone you work with, helping to develop any kind of education or programs for people to help them become entrepreneurs?
We're not doing that in an explicit kind of way, though. I'll say that courses that I teach, or I'll be a guest teacher at some different courses, different PDCs, and sometimes I do a session on running a business, and I think people find that pretty helpful just to hear some of the lessons, you know, also to talk about some of the hard things about running a business and some of the reasons we've not chosen to do some things. And then we also take on interns in our office, so we'll have young folks that are probably going to go on and start their own business, and they're working alongside us, they're doing projects with us, they're basically right there shadowing us and learning the way we do things. And I think that's really kind of a great way for anybody to learn any kind of skill, is to go and work alongside people who are doing it and just take it in on the day-by-day kind of practice. And so I think that's helpful. And there's some people who've interned with us who are now off and running their own businesses, and that's helped. But I do like what you're talking about of curriculum development, of trying to and more explicitly have some training on running a business or running an organization for that matter. Also, my involvement with Pine Permaculture Institute of the Northeast has been a steep learning curve, having not started a nonprofit or run a nonprofit before. There's been a lot to learn there just in organizational work. And so, you know, there's a lot of resources within our networks, and big part of this is leaning on those resources and going out and finding the people that you can work with or talk to learn from.
I really appreciate everything that you've covered with us in this kind of quick progression through the various topics that we had on task. I'd like to definitely do another interview in the future where we can focus in on some of these ideas more. But thank you very much, Jono, for providing this overview of your work and the different ways that we as practitioners can engage and do more. Before we bring things to an end, do you have any final thoughts for the listeners?
Sure. Maybe I just echo what I was bringing up before, which is finding your niche. I think everybody needs to find what they're passionate about and not feel like, though in permaculture we are pretty focused on the homestead and food production, that there's so much that needs to be done, and permaculture can be brought into our communities in so many different ways. And so there's a lot of niches that are needing people to work in all different ways. And so there's room for whatever people are passionate about to bring permaculture into their lives and into their communities and their homes in so many different ways. And it doesn't have to look like what maybe a lot of what we talk about. So I'd say go out there and do what you're excited about.
Well, thank you for spending this, well, a little more than an hour with me through some of our difficulties to finally be able to sit down and have this conversation. I really appreciate it and look forward to sharing this with the world.
Sure. Well, thank you, Scott.
And that was Jono Niger. You can find out more about him and his work at regenerativedesigngroup.com. There was kind of a gotcha question in the middle of this interview that put Jono on the spot about what percentage of his work with the Regenerative Design Group, LLC, could be classified as permaculture. I didn't mean to put him in that place like that, but I appreciate his ability to respond to it, and in the way that he did. I find that his perspective points to the fact of just how varied permaculture can be, and especially making it work in the world that we find ourselves in. This is a system of design. It's not dogma. There is no rote description for what it looks like. As much as we bandy about the line, well, it depends, so often I find that it depends on where you can put your hugelkultur or your swale or your herb spiral. And I want to see us move away from that. That instead of finding techniques and fitting a design to those, that we practice permaculture in our own way and experience design in whatever niche it is that we fill, which is something that's reinforced in this conversation that I learn by speaking to more and more individuals who have practiced permaculture for years. There's plenty of room underneath this umbrella of design than just physical landscape design or teaching. But in order to bring those systems into the world under the framework of permaculture, we need to find our own way forward. There aren't a lot of alternative models of what our own fit can be. Apply permaculture to what it is you do each day, what it is that you want to do. Don't apply yourself to the frameworks of permaculture that we already see in use, but find a way for it to fit into your life. The more that I walk down this road, the less my work is about landscape design, and it becomes more and more about communicating permaculture to the world through this podcast and other media. Evermore, I am a permaculture journalist. If you were to look at your life right now and the work that you do with this system of design, what kind of a title would you give yourself? How would you define your work and what it is that you do? I'd like to hear from you and know what that is. And also, if there's any way that I can help you on your road, get in touch. Email show@thepermaculturepodcast.com or call 717-827-6266. That email and phone line are always open, and I will get back in touch with you as soon as I can. From here, a few weeks ago I mentioned wanting to take the show on the road, and so it begins. Coming up on September 6th, 2014, photographer John and I will attend the first annual Finger Lakes Permaculture Tour. We'll be touring a number of sites between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. in and around Ithaca, New York, before attending a reception at 6 p.m. As I record this, there are currently 12 sites available to tour. If you're able to come out, please do. You can find out more at fingerlakespermaculture.org, and I'll include a link in the show notes to the full event page, where you can also find a link to register if you'll be in attendance. From September 12th through the 14th, 2014, photographer John and I, along with his assistant, will be attending the Mother Earth News Fair in Seven Springs, Pennsylvania, at the Seven Springs Mountain Resort. We'll be arriving late Thursday, the 11th, and staying through until the close of the event on Sunday. So be sure to look for us. I don't know how you'll find us, but I might post pictures of the t-shirt that I'm wearing each day to the Facebook page if you want to find me. Or send me a note if you're going to be at the fair, and we can see about saying hello somewhere. Or maybe see about doing something like a flash mob reception somewhere on site. I don't know, are flash mobs still a thing? I feel so out of touch at the moment. But this is going to be my first time attending Mother, and by every indication, it's a massively good time. Guests this year include Joel Salatin, Ed Begley Jr., Barbara Pleasant, Barbara Damrosch, and many, many more. Find out about this at MotherEarthNews.com/fair/Pennsylvania. Last of my currently scheduled tours is going to be ChabaCon on October 11th, 2014 in Bridgeton, New Jersey. Lester Brown of the Earth Policy Institute will be the keynote speaker, and the festivities start at 7 a.m. with a run in the park with Mr. Brown, followed by lectures and a roundtable discussion throughout the morning and early afternoon, along with a break for brunch, street theater in the afternoon, drumming in the park from 5:30 until dusk, with a final presentation, an evening of cabaret with Jane Seaman from 8 until 10 p.m. Come and see how a town in New Jersey is facing a changing world by raising awareness and taking action. More on this event at historicbuildingarts.org. If you or your organization have an event, project, or site that you would like me to visit and cover, I have availability from mid-October through December 2014, so please contact me and we can work out the details of how this will work. A few class announcements and I'll draw this episode to a close. First up, Jen Mendez at Permi Kids is continuing her Edge Alliances, coming up on Thursday, August 14th from 7 to 7:45 p.m. Eastern Time. Jeannie from Move and Groove is going to help us explore how and why to integrate music into our lives as a way to build community. During this Edge Alliance, the following questions will be explored. How do children experience music? What is a normal musical development process for children? What are some ways we can integrate music into our lives? And how can music help our children connect with themselves and their communities? On Sunday, August 17th from 12:15 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Amy from Supporting the Unschooling Life and Amy Child's Happiness Consultant will explore the idea of and the social-emotional components of alternative forms of education. This Edge Alliance will look at the questions, what is happiness? How can we develop an education based in freedom, trust, and fun? What are some emotional challenges to educating and learning in this way? From there, there are also spaces still available in the Open Enrollment Online PDC. Contact me if you would like more information or to register. If you have a class or other event that you would like listed in the show or on the website, let me know. Again, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com or give me a call, 717-827-6266. Listening to my conversation with Jono again as I edited this material, and as I look at the world as it is, and the vision that I have for the future, I really do truly and deeply believe that we can create a better world each day by being a part of the solution. Turn off the 24-hour news cycle and start focusing on what matters to each of us, what connects us, and what we can do to make a difference that we can solve all the problems we face. Join me in making a beautiful, bountiful world for all life by taking care of the earth, yourself, and each other.